Now come one, come all to this tragic affair. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Columbia House Party. I'm Blake Murphy.
I'm Jake Goldsby.
How's it going, buddy?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm going to throw a curveball at you, though.
Let's do it.
The album I brought for you today is You Can't See Me, the rap album from WWE champion John Cena, featuring the trademark, the T-H-A trademark, with a C.
As if, like, it's good. An album that I know very well.
Yes.
That I definitely knew existed.
A PhD in thugonomics, John Cena has. That's a real album, by
that
the way.
That sounds horrible, and I want us to talk about it one day.
Yeah. I don't think it would get its own episode. I don't know that I could talk about it for that long.
We'll see what the people say. Yeah. Maybe they'll listen to this and be like, why didn't you guys talk about the John Cena record?
Yeah, why didn't you guys talk about the John Cena record? We're going to get into a very fun, out there album. The album I brought today, Jake, is The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance.
It's about time.
We got to hit all the sad boy emo touch.
It is
touch, what'd you call Pickerton? A touchstone?
Touchstone, yeah.
Yeah, we got to hit all of those.
I would say it is a credit to ourselves that we didn't lead off with The Black Parade, because we could have, and we didn't.
My Chemical Romance, by the way, did not like being called emo.
No.
Gerard Way does not like that term.
It's funny to think about how derogatory a statement emo was in the mid-2000s. I feel like that's kind of past now, and like, A, because all the bands that are in the genre are influenced by the mid-2000s, so everyone's cool with it. But like, do you remember, like, all the news stories of the dangers of emo and, like, is your child an emo kid?
Oh,
and
we're going to get into that.
It's like, yeah, it was...
That was this album that did it. So, is your kid dressing up like a skeleton all the time and it's not Halloween?
There was, like, genuine moral panic over emo, which, in retrospect, is fucking hilarious.
Yes. It was like the sister of Marilyn Manson caused Columbine kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're going to get into a lot of that, because the fallout from Black Parade is actually super interesting. One of the reasons I wanted to do it early on is because it was My Chemical Romance more in general than Black Parade specifically, was, I feel like, kind of an important band in terms of, I mean, they were aesthetically very cool and two of their albums are amazing. I feel like they were important for, like, getting a lot of the discussion going about why kids are drawn, like, kids and teenagers, why they're drawn to music with those kind of themes. You know, kind of like that 2002 to 2006 range, where a lot of online communities were like music was such a big thing in online communities, like LiveJournal and MySpace and things like that. Where, you know, I feel like My Chemical Romance was an important band for taking, oh, all these kids are loners, and this is what you listen to if you're a loner. But also now there's a community of loners and outcasts, and you have people to go through that with, and it's a connecting force kind of.
And like, to your point with the aesthetics, like, when, if you say the word like classic emo, like the first thing that pops in your brain is My Chemical Romance aesthetic.
Yeah.
And so I think.
The Helena video.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so it's funny to sort of think about it now and like how rejected it was. And like, I wasn't, I was a closeted emo kid, let's say. Like, I loved all the music, but was like secretly, I think, because it wasn't quote unquote cool like it is now.
See, I had kind of the opposite, where all of my friends listened to pretty much just hip hop. And a couple of my friends literally called me emo fuck for like the entirety of our friendship. And it was like, I had no problem listening to different music. And it's like, yeah, I'll listen to Air Force Ones, but like mostly I'm listening to punk and emo stuff and like going to shows.
Listen to cool bands like Goldfinger and Real Big Fish.
Yeah. Real Big Fish. I can't wait for the ska episode.
Oh boy. There might be a few.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when we talk about Pup. Jake's choking on San Pellegrino.
Yeah.
Jake's choking on unnamed beverage.
Your sponsor here. Non-sponsored beverage.
So My Chemical Romance was interesting for me because like my friends would like tease me a little bit. And I had a second group of friends that was more a music-based group of friends. My Chemical Romance was the one where it went from like, oh, we just don't like the music you like, to, dude, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, what? And that was more Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge. I'm 2 years older than you, so yes. Three Cheers came out when I was in, I think, grade 12.
Yeah, I think I would have been, it would have been grade 10 when it came out. That makes sense.
Yeah, so that was more the one, you know, I have more attachment to Three Cheers because just the timeline of being in high school and stuff. Cheers for Sweet Revenge in 2004, which was like their big breakthrough success. They also had I Brought You My Bullets, You Brought Me Your Love in 2002 before that, which was not as good as Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge. But Black Parade is a much more interesting album.
Yes,
I think the cultural impact is greater. I think the album itself is more interesting than Three Cheers, which is like...
Three Cheers is just like a great punk emo record.
They leaned into being kind of weird and it not fitting in everything else that was going on, and they made a good album.
Yeah.
The Black Parade is a lot more specific.
That's a good word.
A greater narrative thread, an interesting follow-up. We're going to talk about the Black Parade. Black Parade is My Chemical Romance's third album. Came out July 2006. It's obviously a concept album. Just like you can look at it and listen to it, and you can tell there's a concept there. There is a narrative thread though. Like for all Weezer wanting to and kicking around the idea of a rock opera, this is absolutely a rock opera. It tells a story, which is why, you know, as much as the Black Parade would fit really well as an album opener because it kicks ass and that piano riff is amazing. It can't.
When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band. He said, son, when you grow up, would you be the savior of the broken, the beaten, and the damned? He said, will you defeat them, your demons and all the non-believers, the plans that they have made? Because one day I'll leave you a phantom to lead you in the summer to join the Black Parade.
Iconic.
Yeah, like that. That is one of the genre's most iconic moments. To this day, I still can't believe that's not the first track on the album.
It doesn't fit the story as the lead song. There's a story start to finish that kind of touches on death, afterlife, reflection, redemption, if you interpret it a certain way. interesting. Produced by Rob Cavallo, who had done a ton of stuff. Alanis Morissette, Paramore, Dave Matthews Band, Goo Goo Dolls, Meatloaf,
all the bands, Jawbreaker. All the bands I think of when I think of My Chemical Romance.
I mean, I think what's interesting about his history is that he's been all over the place, and that allowed for. I think that fits pretty well when a band is trying something really out there.
Yeah,
a guy who's been all over.
He's one of those like super producers in a way.
Yeah, he's done it all. Meatloaf was an interesting one to come across. Like, there's a connection from Meatloaf to My Chemical Romance. We're going to talk about
that. You want to talk about rock operas?
Yes. I'm going to save that for the Meatloaf episode because there is a ton of interesting stuff about that album. We're going to bring my dad on for that one.
Bad Hell whips ass.
That was like...
The interesting thing about Bad Hell is that it rules.
Yeah. Also, like, the only album my dad listened to in his car for, like, a year straight.
We definitely had a cassette in the car as well.
Yeah, I remember, vividly pulling up to my dad's softball games listening to Meatloaf.
You want to get pumped up? Throw on Bat Out of Hell.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. do you just want to do a Bat Out of Hell episode now?
Kind
of. Yeah, we will do that eventually.
Is that next week?
I mean, we could. We'll see. We'll see what happens at the end of this episode. So Black Parade comes out. My Chemical Romance kicks off a 138-stop world tour off of the success of this album. It debuted at number 2 on the Billboard charts in the U.S., behind the Hannah Montana album.
Wow.
It debuted at number 2 on the Billboard charts in the U.K., behind Robbie Williams.
That makes more sense.
That makes more sense than being stuck behind Hannah Montana. Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge eventually went triple platinum. The success of the Black Parade was more immediate out of the gate. It also eventually went triple platinum in the US. It's double platinum in the UK, platinum in Canada and Australia. This album was like, I mean, you debut at number 2 on the Billboard in the US and the UK as an emo album that is huge. They got 4 singles off of it. Welcome to the Black Parade was My Chemical Romance's first number 1 single. It didn't hit number 1 in the US, but it was number 1 in the UK. Interestingly, in digging into this album, I knew, like, My Chemical Romance was popular in the US and it broke through. The thirst for My Chemical Romance in UK was crazy.
I don't think I even at the time I don't think I realized how big this album was.
Yeah, like an emo album. Even if you don't want to frame it as emo, you can call it whatever you want,
a rock album.
Yeah, to debut at number 2 and like produce 4 big singles, like they did SNL. My Chemical Romance was the musical guest on SNL. It's just wild. A weird thing to think of. And it was received really well. Metacritic has like 79 out of 100 as an average grade. Most publications gave it 4 or 4.5. NME gave it 9 out of 10. IGN said it celebrated the over-the-top 1970s rock scene, which is a pretty good way to put it. Rolling Stone also loved that it felt like a classic rock album.
I remember there was a lot of Queen comparisons being tossed around when it came out.
There were a lot of Queen comparisons, a lot of Bowie, Ziggy Stardust. Rolling Stone called it number 20 album of 2006, and that was low. Spin had it at 5. Kerrang had it at number 2.
Wow.
Alt Press called it My Chemical Romance's raison d'etre and a mega decibel calling card, which is, pretty good. There were some negative reviews. Basically, the negative reviews came down to this band isn't good enough to try something this ambitious. Someone said it was beyond their station, which I disagree with.
Fuck off.
They nailed it. This album kicks ass.
And also, even if it didn't, like, bands can try whatever the hell they want. Why are you punishing a band for trying to be ambitious and like overreach? More bands should overreach.
Yeah. We just talked last episode about how Weezer didn't overreach nearly enough.
Now come on, come all to this tragic affair. Wipe off that makeup, what's in is despair. So throw on the black dress, mix in with the lot. You might wake up and notice you're someone you're not. If you look in the mirror and don't like what you see, you can find out firsthand what it's like to be me. So gather around, piggies, and kiss this goodbye. I'd encourage your smiles, I'd expect you won't cry.
Okay, so the Black Parade, the story is interesting. So The Patient is the lead character. If you've seen the video for Welcome to the Black Parade, that video is kind of the entire album sped up, like the story of the album sped up into one. Kind of, if you couple it with Famous Last Words,
yeah,
also, which is an awesome video. We'll talk about that after. I have a weird note from Famous Last Words, if you can remember the video at all. So this is the story of The Patient. The album begins with him finding out he has cancer. He lashes out. You get the context of he has roughly 2 weeks to live. He goes through the first couple songs of the album are him, you know, dealing with that, lashing out, reflecting on his life before he dies and what, you know, what he's going to have trouble living without and things like that. And then he goes on a little bit of like a rock and roll rampage. and then we get to Welcome to the Black Parade. Welcome to the Black Parade is based on Gerard Way's belief that, or I don't know if it's a belief or just like what he envisioned for this particular story. The Grim Reaper comes for you in the form of your fondest memory. Oh. So the Black Parade, obviously it is this, the patient's fondest memory is not a Black Parade, but it is a parade he went to with his dad. So when death comes for him, it's in the form of a parade with a marching band, one of his fondest memories. So the Black Parade is obviously a stand-in for death. The patient dies. The second half of the album then is him reflecting on his love. House of the Wolves is his arrival in hell or purgatory, depending on how you read it. Eventually, he accepts it. You get a lot of, there's a lot of context that the patient like went to war. Like Mother War is a character in the story that he has some confrontations with and has trouble with. And it's kind of like, it fits the overall story, but it's almost like a detail that's just on the side. And it's like you could have told the story without, but like, that's cool. It's a little harder to contextualize that part. Cause like, you don't know for sure if you're reading into it right or whatever. Obviously he reflects on his teen years in teenagers. That's which is just like,
an odd duck on this album.
What a weird song. Also like the fact that it was a single.
Yeah.
And like a successful single. So the singles off this one were Welcome to the Black Parade and Famous Last Words, which are the two like most important. So the album ends on Famous Last Words, which is kind of a song of redemption and hope. You can, depending on how you view the entire story, you can either look at it as him coming to terms with death and accepting it, or you could take the perspective that this entire album played out while he was like in the balance and he is going to live.
Mm.
And this whole Black Parade then has changed his perspective on life, because a lot of it is, as he's looking back, it's a lot more colorful than he lays it out at the beginning.
Right.
It turns out that there's a lot more interesting. There's a lot more meat to his story than the patient maybe leads on early in the album. What's cool about it? I mean, a lot of things are cool about it. We talked the other night about how I just want to wear a Black Parade outfit to your wedding.
Yeah. I mean, it's up
Cassie's alley.
If you want to do that, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. So My Chemical Romance kind of like go back and forth between being My Chemical Romance and a side band called The Black Parade. So Welcome to the Black Parade. Very obvious. Famous Last Words is the one where like they go back to being My Chemical Romance and it's just a kick-ass rock song.
I love that fucking song.
Yeah, it's so good. The video's great. Also, we're going to talk about the impact of this album and the fallout, and Famous Last Words is a really important part of that. Welcome to Black Parade, Famous Last Words, I Don't Love You, and Teenagers were the singles.
I Don't Love You was a single. I didn't know that.
It was. Huh. That's kind of a... It's not my favorite song.
No, me neither, but it's interesting to me that like when I think of the singles and the videos of this album, I actually didn't even realize Famous Last Words was a single for a long time. Like, in my mind, the singles from, like, the capital S singles from this one were Black Parade and Teenagers.
Yes.
It's just, I did not know I Don't Love You was a single.
Yeah, so with My Chemical Romance shifting into the character of the Black Parade for this album, they actually would perform in costume as the Black Parade for their concerts. It even led to some confusion where, like, there was a stretch where people thought the Black Parade was a band opening for My Chemical Romance because they would be like, oh, we're the Black Parade. And it, like, it gets a little confusing if you're not familiar with My Chemical Romance and the album. And I would assume I didn't see them during, I didn't see them post Black Parade. I saw them post Three Cheers. I would assume that they played the Black Parade in order.
Yeah, there's a great,
it would be hard,
you can go on YouTube there, they, I think it was a DVD, but it's on in like fully high quality on YouTube. They did, it's a show in Mexico, I believe, and they do Black Parade front to back, and I believe the whole tour was like this. Black Parade front to back, and then the encore they're out of Black Parade costume and in, they just look like them themselves. Yes. And they play like seven songs from Three Cheers.
Cool.
But it's actually, I think it's actually a really cool way to do a show. Like if you watch in the concert video, the thing begins with Gerard Way on a hospital gurney covered up singing the end. And then he like jumps off the gurney when Dead kicks in and they do the whole thing.
Which is interesting because in the video for Welcome to the Black Parade, he is not the patient.
Right.
He is the leader of the Black Parade and he's, you know, he's kind of narrating to the patient what is taking place.
I think live he is still that. He just starts.
Yeah, you can't have someone who's not Gerard Way start the concert off like that.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah, it's cool. That would have been really cool to see them live during that period.
I never got to see them, and I wish I would only really be interested in seeing them do that.
Yes. I saw them at Warped before Black Parade came out. Mm. I saw, I think, 05. That was one of the most loaded Warped tours.
Yeah. Man, Warped Tour used to be so good.
Yeah. Problematic.
Yes.
But yes. Sure could fill a lineup. So obviously, this album, both in terms of how they performed, how it was written, how Gerard Way conceptualized it. There are two big influences. One comes from music, Pink Floyd's The Wall, Freddie Mercury, Bowie's Ziggy Stardust, even Smashing Pumpkins a little bit.
Yeah.
You can see where he's pulling theatrically from a lot of that stuff. Gerard Way is also a huge comic book fan. I think people who know My Chemical Romance, Gerard Way, are aware of that. He wrote The Umbrella Academy. He co-wrote another mini comic book miniseries.
Umbrella Academy does seem to have like a lot of the same aesthetics that Black Parade carries.
Yes. The other one is The True Lies of the Fabulous Killjoys, which is also the name of their fourth album.
Right.
So yeah, that was a comic miniseries. He did some solo work as well, but he co-founded, after My Chemical Romance was done, he co-founded the Young Animal imprint under DC Comics. He did Umbrella Academy, which was then turned into a TV show that he was involved with. Before My Chemical Romance got started, he was interning at the Cartoon Network.
Really?
He was, he was more an artist than, right. Like, he was obviously a very talented musician. Weirdly, what got his ass in gear with music was 9/11. He was just like, I need to make a difference. I need to give people something they can like rally around and connect with and make a positive impact. Wow. So when they first started recording in New Jersey, they had a view of the New York sky. They could like see the New York skyline. So yeah, 9/11.
Wow. I had no idea there was a 9/11 connection to My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. It's weird.
Also just a record, Gerard Way's solo album whips ass.
Yeah. Baby, like, You're a Haunted House.
It sounds like, It sounds like Supergrass. It's a great album.
Yeah. I don't think Baby, You're a Haunted House is on that album. It was just a single, but it was amazing. The entire band performing as skeletons.
Yeah.
Bones. Unfortunately, so this is Bones. it's the prequel to that song.
That song.
obvious music influences, Pink Floyd, Queen, Bowie. The comic book influence is very clear in the aesthetics and the whole story. A cool way that I heard the album described by Jeremy Gordon of Spin in 2016, he called it campy but earnest.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like camp is a good term for what the Black Parade is. Like, they obviously knew what they were doing and that it was a little out there, but they didn't really care.
Yeah.
Ray Toro told All Press that they were trying to make something classic and something timeless with the Black Parade. That was in 2013. He said that. And I think pretty accurate. Also, the video was produced by the same guy who did Smells Like Teen Spirit and American Idiot videos.
Huh.
Yeah, Samuel Bayer.
Only one of those ripped off Dillinger 4.
The other cool thing, not cool, sorry. I don't know why I said it was cool. This is not cool. It's kind of, I'm an idiot. Two ways I saw it described: Bohemian Rhapsody for millennials.
I remember that one, yeah.
I hate the term millennials. Me too. Because like it covers, like, I didn't have a computer until grade 9. And then people who are also millennials had cell phones at like 9.
Yeah,
at,
the like range, the range is 10. Way too wide.
It's way too wide. Bohemian Rhapsody was another one, but I feel like My Chemical Romance was very much not the bros.
No, not at all. And like, they were, I feel like that's also what got sort of tied up in a lot of the emo controversy, because like the My Chemical Romance side of emo was absolutely a reaction to that.
Yes.
But it became so popular that like the bros love, maybe not My Chemical Romance, but like they love Fall Out Boy and they loved like,
yeah, especially as Fall Out Boy transitioned to Arena Stadium Rock.
Yeah. But like, it's, I, I think that's maybe why I always liked My Chemical Romance a little more, because they were intentionally trying to not do that. I'm sure there was spillover just because they were too big for it to not.
But. Yeah, it's almost like, okay, well, I like this pop punk, and it like it's just good enough that other people get to enjoy it, but My Chemical Romance is ours.
And kind like, of. Yeah, and like even like the Foo Fighters have a song called Cheer Up Boys, Your Makeup Is Running from around this time. And like there was just such a, I like the Foo Fighters, but like there was such a revulsion to these boys wearing makeup and being sad that in 2019 seems so silly, but it was like an entire pushback against it. It was very weird.
Yeah. It's we're going to talk about some of the mental health side of this and the community aspects that fell from this album. In general, the ambition of this album is incredible. Like it's a good snapshot of where the scene was transitioning, kind of the goth emo comic book thing. Almost ahead of its time in like the last 5 or 10 years probably, we've seen like every corner of like geekdom get like mainstreamed.
Yeah.
Like capitalism has come for all of it. Like comic books are the biggest thing now. And, you know, every nerdy subculture has had its moment. And this as like a goth slash emo slash comic book crossover was just like a little early.
I wonder what how both the album and the aesthetics would be received today.
Probably even better.
I would think so.
Like it's,
I feel like a lot of that, like not even vaguely, like overtly homophobic reactions to
a dude in makeup and having feelings.
Yeah. Like I think that wouldn't happen today.
Yeah. Now I do wonder if
that could be because of the album.
Yeah. And it could make the album less important, right? Like if it comes out and it's just like a cool rock opera, it's like, okay, there's still a place for that. It would still be a good album, but the cultural impact wouldn't be there as much coming today. It was pretty early.
Yeah.
And that was the point. Like Gerard Way cared deeply about making those kind of impacts. We're going to talk in a little bit about how that got kind of twisted and turned the other way. A couple more cool notes from the album first, though. As part of the ambition and the rock opera, it gets weird in parts, which you'd expect. Blood as a Secret bonus track is just like a ridiculous song. Like it sounds like a Panic at the Disco bonus track, not a My Chemical Romance one. It's weird. Mama is maybe the most interesting song, like just the like structurally and where it goes.
It's a weird tune.
Mama, we all go to hell. Mama, we all go to hell. I'm writing this letter and wishing you well. Mama, we all go to hell. Oh, well, now, Mama, we're all gonna die.
Liza Minnelli on the My Chemical Romance album. That's like, how cool is that?
So I'm sure you have an answer for me. I have genuinely had the thought many times of A, how did that happen? And B, I just want to imagine the conversation and like the in-studio experience of Liza Minnelli in all her Liza-ness being in studio with My Chemical Romance.
So the answer to both is a little disappointing, honestly. Oh,
okay.
Basically, the how it happened was Gerard Way really loved Liza Minnelli, and they asked, and she said yes.
Okay.
Rob Cavallo, the producer, made a couple of calls, and apparently she was really excited and said she would love to do it. The disappointing part to your second part, they recorded it remotely.
Liza
Minnelli did it at a studio.
That makes a lot of sense, though.
She did it at a studio in New York with a different engineer. Gerard said, the first time I got to speak to her was through the mixing board. That's from a New York Times article where he finally revealed, I guess it had been a couple years and people were still curious. So yeah, he just talked to her through a mixing board from LA to New York and the producer put it together. Yeah, it's not as fun a story as...
I wonder if Liza had her wits about her enough to like know who My Chemical Romance were.
I'm sure that they had to like play her some of it and like explain that like, hey, we're doing this rock opera.
Yeah, I want to live in the world where Liza Minnelli is like kind of a My Chemical Romance fan. I think that would kick ass.
I think she would be, maybe not of the music, but like she would definitely, I mean, she was on the album.
The idea
of a rock opera and like the costumes and it's just like, it's a very Liza Minnelli
thing. It is. It's the fact that there's a featuring Liza Minnelli on a My Chemical Romance album track list just tickles me.
Probably the most interesting part of the album in terms of what you take away from it is Famous Last Words. It was a single song. Kicks ass on its own. It does not require the context of the rest of the album to be a kick-ass
song. I would go as far
as
say it's my favorite My Chemical Romance song.
Yeah, it's up.
We'll get
to that for sure. It's also, you can view it as the redemption part of the patient's story.
And I know there's nothing I can say to change that part. To change that.
This is how the album ends, and the video adds to it. It's incredible. The world is like burning behind them. Gerard Way is on his knees screaming this refrain. I am not afraid to keep on living. I am not afraid to walk this world alone. The I am not afraid to keep on living being repeated over and over again at the end of the album is what, to me, maybe it's not him accepting his death. Maybe, you know, this was all like the flash of light. You know, when apparently you die and you see... The flash of light or whatever. This is all it. But it's also, you know, there's a lot of messaging and within the album, and My Chemical Romance has always tried to be hopeful within the sadness and the difficulty. But I think ending the album that way is awesome. Also a cool thing in the video, when he's on his knees screaming, he was actually on his knees screaming. He injured himself.
Really?
Yeah. He, I think he tore his Achilles.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. Yeah. He tore ankle ligaments while filming, and they used the footage of him being on the ground screaming.
That kind of rolls.
Yeah. One of the other band members also got like really badly burned.
I remember that. Yeah, that's right. With the pyro.
Yeah. That's cool video, but be careful. All right, we are going to talk about the cultural impact of this album, which I think is as notable as the very cool album itself. So this album came out in 2006.
Yes.
In 2008, a 13-year-old British girl hung herself. The Sun framed this as her being part of a self-harm emo cult that was associated with My Chemical Romance. Across the Sun... and the Daily Mail, panic.
Two very rational outlets.
Panic in the UK about My Chemical Romance and about these emo cults. The Sun, which is a British tabloid, published the headline, Suicide of Hannah, the Secret Emo. The coroner himself said that My Chemical Romance's music glamorized suicide and called it a sinister cult.
Oh my God.
Obviously, that stuff's not true, but this was a huge, huge deal. So one of the explanations to, I can't remember if it was the Daily Mail or the Sun, but they thought that the Black Parade is where emos go when they die, and like welcoming people to the Black Parade was suggesting that they kill themselves to join up
in emo heaven. Yes. Or whatever.
Yes. That's the emo place. Amazing. There's a good place. There's a bad place. There's the emo place.
I remember I have like a vision in my brain of a news report in the States of like kids lining up for CDs or concert or whatever. And just the camera panning across these like 6-year-old emo kids and it being framed as like the dangers of letting your child be an emo.
Yes. So the band released a statement pretty much immediately and was like, obviously, this is stupid. The band statement was along the lines of, we're anti-suicide, we're anti-violence, we're pro-hope, we're pro-courage. If you actually take the time to listen, it's pretty clear. Like, we just talked about Famous Last Words. The album ends on, I'm not afraid to keep on living. So fans had actually planned a march across London to the Daily Mail offices to protest this. It eventually got canceled. The police,
it's probably good.
Yeah, the police were going to get involved, and it's probably best that it did not. But for a while during their UK gigs, the band would say like "fuck the Daily Mail" regularly, which
fair, yeah.
And fans would respond not only outside the like with this planned protest, but you would see at My Chemical Romance concerts there were signs like "MCR saves lives" or the last lyric, "Not afraid to keep on living." The pushback was a lot of My Chemical Romance fans and fans of this genre being like, hey, no, you guys, not only is this on its face just fucking stupid, you have completely misunderstood what this is and what this community is and what this album has done bringing us together. It's not a suicide call. It's a support group.
Which I think is like, I know that a lot of my favorite bands, a lot of my favorite albums are like in capital letters, like bands that mean a lot to people.
Yes.
And I think that emo, specifically My Chemical Romance, but the genre as a whole in the mid to late 2000s, I mean, I guess you could call it a like fan cult, but that could be the case for any genre.
You could call it a community is a better exactly. word for it, right?
And, but I think there was a like, in to your point about like the reaction to it, there was a like insular sort of idea going on that like this is ours and now you are trying to take this from us, so fuck you, and we're gonna like even react even stronger to make this ours, which I think is the right way to react to fandom. But like, I don't know, because I wasn't really part of that scene, but I don't think it was done in like a like gatekeeping stay out of our scene kind of way.
No, it was just, a don't misrepresent our scene.
Yeah,
it's like everyone is welcome if you're going through this, but like don't frame it as something it's not. Like, there's a deep misunderstanding there. And this applies beyond My Chemical Romance. It applies to my friends calling me an emo fuck in high school. It applies to every parent that worried their kid was listening to sad music and that was going to make them more depressed.
Does happen every generation. Like, I mean, every 10 years, there's like a genre that everyone worries about.
Yes. And the thing that I think older people or the tabloids or whatever, the people who aren't a part of that group, misunderstand is the direction of causation. It is not people listen to this music and get sad and get suicidal or lean
people
into
are already depressed.
It's these people who are in trouble or feel marginalized or feel outcast. And like, this doesn't apply to everyone. There are popular kids. Like, I was popular enough in high school. It was like I played sports and had lots of friends and stuff, but and I was still drawn to this stuff, but I was also a little sad. There are like, this doesn't apply across the board, but for a lot of people, I think it's the people who are already in trouble or these lyrics speak to because of what they're already going through, and they then seek support in the music and the communities around them. It's not the other way around. It's not I slip you a My Chemical Romance mix
and now
you come back to school the next day sad and depressed.
Now I'm depressed. Yes. I also think it's like we talk a lot just in our lives, as we should, about how the stigma of mental health and depression and all that should and is starting to lessen and like be more open about your feelings and what you're doing. I feel like not that My Chemical Romance are the first sad band, not that they're the first band to have these kind of lyrics, because that's been happening for 50, 60 years at this point. But I think that this kind of stuff, like boys in makeup and talking, singing about feelings to dumb it down to a potentially, you know, regressive definition, but it's, that I think you can sort of start to chart where talking about this kind of stuff became more acceptable.
Yeah, that's a really, it's a great point. There was, in 2016, Vice had The Noisy Guide to Music and Mental Health. And they talked a lot about My Chemical Romance within that. And I think that, you know, through my own personal experience, but also through an article like that, that looks back at the last 20 years and where music has gone and where the conversation about mental health has gone, mainstream emo, like emo becoming popular enough. And like, I'm using emo broadly here. Yeah. Like you can include pop punk, you can include the like sadder folky stuff. Music with an emotional message that people felt okay expressing their sadness or depression or anxieties through, that becoming more mainstream, becoming like profitable, becoming something that can be sold. And then something that mainstream is the word for it. Like that being more of a thing, I think opened people up to have more conversations about that stuff. Like,
And I think it's might seem quaint or funny to talk about, but like when you read any retrospective on pop punk and you listen and you hear about Descendants and Jawbreaker specifically, mm-hmm. and this idea of how revolutionary it was for bands that sounded like that to be singing about their feelings.
Yeah.
And like now it's like, of course, but it wasn't a popular thing. It wasn't a profitable thing. It was like, we talked about Pinkerton.
Yeah.
And like
how much it bombed.
And it got that was this, and it got absolutely shelled. And then 10 years later you have Black Parade and it's like, okay, now we're starting to get to where, and then now you have today where you have like, Julian Bakers of the world.
Yeah, if
and
you don't have emotion in your music, like you can still sell that way. But like Casey Musgraves is like a cowboy emo. Like
Adele.
Yeah.
Like just writes about like breakups.
Harry Styles even. Like I mean, Harry Styles is a lot of sex appeal in the music. Yeah. But like a lot of the biggest pop artists now are, and like pop didn't not talk about that stuff before, but like pop.
It was coded though.
Yeah.
Now it's like, now you don't have to write it in a metaphor. Now you can just be like, hey, here's why I'm fucking sad.
Yeah, this sucks. So because of this, so this was 2008 that the Suicide of Hannah came out and the kind of follow from this. In 2011, Dr. Rosemary Lucy Hill of the University of Leeds wrote an academic research paper on this called Emo Saved My Life. And it kind of goes into what we're talking about and the fostering of community and people who are already dealing with things, seeking these things out. We talked about most of the points that the piece touches on. The one that I found interesting that we haven't mentioned is her takeaway was that women were disproportionately treated as the victims of the music, almost as if like they didn't have the agency themselves to seek out solace. Obviously, that's not an experience you and I can speak to, but I thought that that was an interesting takeaway. And like I think back to what was going on around the time of the Black Parade. It's like, okay, Paramore was on the come up, but that was like,
they were like, that was kind of close. Like there were others, obviously.
But yeah.
They were like, it's true though. Like a lot of that decade of, I mean like a lot of decades of music, but that decade specifically had, I don't think it's a stretch to call it a misogynistic genre at that time.
For sure. And My Chemical Romance is not guilty of that as far as I know. Like lyrically, there's not much of that.
They're too high concept for it. It seems.
Also like, you obviously never believe in your idols at this point anymore, but like Gerard Way, like, I don't know. He's always talked about like fostering that kind of stuff and making a positive impact and stuff like that. But yeah, so I thought that was an interesting thing. Like as I was refreshing myself on this, like, oh yeah, there is like, obviously there's a severe underrepresentation of women in that scene at that time. And like you said, in most music scenes and most music times. Them being disproportionately treated as the victim, as like, oh, you don't have the agency to like, you're sad and you seek out support. It's like, no, the music must have done this to you. I thought that was an interesting perspective that I hadn't really thought of.
And I think maybe I could be wrong and this could be my like straight white guy angle on it. But I think that sort of the androgyny and the makeup aesthetic side of My Chemical Romance makes them a little more approachable from that side of things, because they are not posturing themselves as like the, not even tough guys, because none of this was tough guys, but like they're not, you know, Take Back Sunday or like the guys who like, we've been hurt but we're like still there. Like My Chemical Romance seems to always be very open to straddling that line a little bit. And like, I don't want to call it the male female line because I think that's not a thing, but I think they were always more, I think, easy to digest from that perspective of things intentionally.
Yeah.
And it works, I guess, because they sold a lot of records.
They sold a lot of records, and they made two extremely good records. I don't know. They're always. I appreciate very much the like. Oh, I'm a. I play sports and I hang out with jocks, but also I'm doing all the theater stuff and like, oh yeah, yeah. Here's a band for you.
This album definitely spoke to my theater kid inside me for sure.
Yeah. I don't talk a lot about being a theater kid, but I did a little bit of that stuff. I just can't sing. I couldn't,
my job.
I couldn't have a role in any of the musicals.
Right.
It was really funny. So, one of my best friends in high school, his name's Jeff. Whenever the production was a musical, he was the lead and I would play like there was one, we did a musical of Big and I played seven different characters.
Of Big?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I played seven different characters. I was just like changing every scene because like I can't sing, so I can't be like a main role.
Right.
But I can be like everyone with a speaking line and just like change my clothes quickly. But then anytime it was a non-musical, we flipped spots.
Okay. And
I would be in the lead role. And I mean, when our school did non-musical plays, it was much smaller scale than our musicals, obviously.
Right, but, of course.
Anyway, so that is The Black Parade.
Okay.
We disagree on this a little bit, and it's almost a little backwards because we're talking about The Black Parade. Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, like, hit me more. Like, I think The Black Parade is a better and more interesting album, but Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge came out when I was in high school, and I was, like, really getting into the scene and stuff, yeah. And I just, like, I feel like I probably listened to it more.
I feel like it's also might be an age thing. Like, even though we're only 2 years apart.
It's an important 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, the 2 years between 31 and 33 are not important. But between 16 and 18.
Yeah, totally.
Or 18 and 20 is pretty. So what I want to do, I don't think we need to rank My Chemical Romance albums. I think.
It's only four of them.
Yes. And the first one is fine.
I like it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
It's a good hint of what was to come, I would say.
Yes. I didn't love Danger Days, The True Lies of the Fabulous Killjoys.
So I had actually, until about 6 months ago, I had actually never listened to
really the
fourth album. Because I kind of, just like age-wise, after Black Parade, I was just kind of, I went much more into that like, what Pitchfork told me to read phase of my life.
Also, like, they took 4 years to put the next album out. What was interesting about Danger Days is that they talked a lot about wanting to get back to, like, Gerard Way said, end quote, the band misses being a rock band.
Mm.
So I think they got tired out a little bit, maybe, of the high concept stuff. They actually thought, when they made this album, they sent it to friends, as you do in the music industry.
Made Danger Days?
Yes. A friend told them that it would make the rest of their work redundant. Like, people had high expectations for Danger Days. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way. They had planned a fifth album. It never came out. They broke up in 2013. Gerard Way went on to do cool comic book stuff. To the Community point, I thought this was a cool footnote. He, after the band broke up, he set up a P.O. box for, like, fans to still connect with him.
That is cool.
Yeah. That speaks to, I think, that he always, like, that was always an important part of the music to him, the fostering of the community. Sorry, I'm just looking at my random notes now. I think it's funny. For the fourth album, they also got a new drummer and then fired him because he was stealing from the band.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so fun. that was some nice drama between albums three and
four. Did the other drummer leave because he got burned making that video?
No. I don't know why he left. On that big tour that they did, everyone got food poisoning, and at one point, everyone had subbed out for a stretch except for Gerard Way, including Muse had to be taken off the tour because they all got food poisoning really badly.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, all of that is to say there are not enough My Chemical Romance albums to rank. Danger Days is a clear number four. Clear number three for I Brought You My Bullets, You Brought Me Your Love. The debate comes down to Three Cheers versus Black Parade.
Yeah, I think that is a accurate statement.
All right, we have the two song lists in front of us. I don't think we need to debate Black Parade versus Three Cheers. I think it's a perspective and timing thing.
I think,
I think the Black Parade is obviously a more ambitious
album. And as you said, I think we can go, I think objectively, it's not a stretch to say that Black Parade is definitely more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's better or not is subjective, someone knows. But yeah, I think
honestly, it kind of like, it's just like, it's also like such a good sequel to
Three
Cheers. Like, those two albums fit so well together.
I also found that, like, when we were, when a friend, my friend Andrew got married in Ottawa, and myself, Cassie and our friend Jacob Kramer, drove down to Ottawa together and just obviously listened to emo music the whole way.
Naturally.
We listened to Three Cheers and Black Parade back to back. And I was struck by not only how they fit really well together as companion pieces, but also, like, My Chemical Romance's songs were so good.
Yeah.
Like, for a genre that got maybe unfairly maligned for not like the music being less interesting than the scene.
Yeah.
Which I think for a lot of mid-2000s emo bands is accurate. Like My Chemical Romance's songs were really good.
Three Cheers has like bangers.
Yeah.
And like the Black Parade has some really good songs. Like Famous Last Words, House of Wolves, Welcome to the Black Parade. Those all stand alone as really good single songs. I think my biggest take with Three Cheers is that the highs are higher. Like, I think Three Cheers has a better, like, top, like, best four songs.
See, I agree to an extent. I think that, I don't think there's anything on Three Cheers that touches Famous Last Words or Welcome to the Black Parade.
Okay.
But the rest of it,
I like, think. Like, Three Cheers might have, like, song, like 3 through 7 My Chemical Romance best songs.
Yeah, I think so. I think Three Cheers' average might be higher.
Okay.
But I think that the peaks of the Black Parade are so, not only great songs, but like it's so ambitious. And I think it's, you can't.
And the videos.
And the video.
I mean,
the whole
not
thing.
Not to say Three Cheers, like.
Plane is a, like, a, and I'm Not Okay are classic videos of the genre. But you can't, I find it very hard to separate Black Parade from its importance and its place in time and its context, which I think Three Cheers, it's easier to be like, that's a great pop punk album.
Yeah. And
unquestionably,
and it looked
like,
really cool.
And it looked really cool. But like, just the.
You don't know karate.
But like Black Parade's just so massive.
The other thing I didn't remember about Three Cheers until going back and listening to it again for this, it has a ton of Fall Out Boy track titles.
Yes.
Like, you know what they do to guys like us in prison.
It's not a fashion statement, it's a fucking death wish.
I never told you what I do for a living. Like these are song titles Fall Out Boy didn't use, and they were like, hey, you guys want this?
You can sing It's Not a Fashion Statement, It's a Fucking Death Wish, to the same tune as This Ain't a Scene, It's an Arms Race, if you want to.
Let's not do that. No one needs to hear me sing. I feel like the band that is most closely associated with, like, maybe not, maybe it's just the association I have, but like, do you keep the Used in the same kind of headspace as
I don't. I put the Used in like the Finch,
okay,
Silverstein,
yeah,
bracket.
What It Is to Burn.
Yeah, I take my, whenever I think of like mid-2000 emo, my first three touchstones are always Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, and Panic at the Disco.
Yes.
That's where I kind of go.
Panic at the Disco is so good. The reason I mentioned the Used, by the way, is just like when I was reading up on this, a lot of the stuff, like the Used came up alongside My Chemical Romance in a lot of the like, oh, there's a cult of emo stuff.
Yeah.
Because their lyrics are like even more unabashedly like I'm so suicidal. But even they, like, even some of their saddest songs like have tinges of hope. Like their worst songs are like very not hopeful.
I'm gonna admit I was not a fan of the Used. I don't know their stuff very
really?
Well, I kind of missed the screamo
okay.
side of things, kind of I missed it.
Okay.
It just didn't connect with me, and I was rather listen to ska when that stuff was popular, because I put it earlier too, that to me that's like 2001 2002.
Yeah, which is interesting because they ended up, my youngest brother, who's 5 years younger than me, the Used ended up being his favorite band. Like he just like recycled all my music.
I know Cassie and her friends were really into the Used and mm-hmm. like that side of things, but it just never hit me.
So if you have Famous Last Words as the best My Chemical Romance song or Welcome to the Black Parade?
I think Famous Last Words is my favorite.
Okay.
But I think if you're talking in the canon, so to speak, I don't think you can put anything but Welcome to the Black Parade.
Yeah.
Like it's just it's
the
their
emo anthem.
It's their defining song. It's their, you know, it's their Born to Run. It's their Bohemian Rhapsody. It's their, if you say Welcome to the Black Parade to somebody, they know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I think Famous Last Words I like as a song more, but Black Parade is
yeah. Famous Last Words is just like a kick-ass rock song.
Yeah, it really rules a lot.
And then off Three Cheers, I think like Helena and I'm Not Okay are like those made sense as the big singles. They're awesome tracks.
I've really? Never been a big fan of Helena.
Oh man,
I think I'm Not Okay is a great tune.
Yeah,
the video.
Maybe it plays up because of the video. Like it's just
the
like,
video's great, and I think it's also like we were saying, it's hard to divorce Helena from context as well.
Yes,
because that was like the beginning of like. Oh, you guys all really like Tim Burton, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's, but yeah, I don't know. Helena, I like. Like I think it's a good song, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't be in my top five on Three Cheers.
What would?
Thank You for the Venom is my favorite song.
Yes.
That song whips ass. To the End's a great, I would have on there. Cemetery Drive, I really like.
Okay.
And I'm Not Okay and Give 'Em Hell Kid, maybe.
Yeah. That's so good.
Your point, I think you made a really good point about comparing them where like, those five tracks are amazing songs, but there's more filler on Three Cheers than there is on Black Parade, I think.
And I wonder how much of that is because everything on the Black Parade fits the concept and the story, right?
It's very focused.
Yeah, you can't, like, Cancer kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
yeah, I'd agree. That's pretty good. Also my least favorite, I would say. Although I don't love Teenagers, I will admit.
It's just so weird and cheesy and like, it's what it needed to be.
I don't get why it's on the album. Like,
it doesn't fit the story super well.
And it
either.
Doesn't fit the style of the album. Like, it feels like a song that they would put, it feels like a song a band puts on their like fifth record. You know what I mean?
Also, like, you know, the whole, like the allusions to shooting up the school.
Yeah.
It just like, I don't think it, that's maybe the one spot where they fumbled the whole like message. Like, I think maybe that it's just like, I get what they were going for and the perspective, but like, it requires you to think about it. And that song being a single with those lyrics is just iffy.
And like the, it's honestly, it sounds like a song that the label said, we need a pop single.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds
like. And they chose those lyrics.
Yeah.
Because the drugs never work. They gonna give you a smirk. Cause they got methods of keeping you clean. They gonna rip up your head. Your aspirations to shreds. Another cog in the murder machine. They said I'm teenager scared. The living shit out of me. They could care less as long as I wanna bleed. So talk in your clothes. I'll try to buy a leg post. Maybe they'll leave you alone, but not me.
It's interesting to me that they had four singles off of like a concept album that is one cohesive story. And
yeah, and it, I have just no recollection of I Don't Love You being a single. It's not even in my brain at all.
Yeah, I'm sure I don't have the charts in front of me, but I'm sure it charted the worst of them.
I feel like it would have to because the other three were massive.
In terms of concept albums, I love an album that tells a story me from too. Start to finish. Like A Grand Don't Come for Free by the Streets. Like the we're starting here. We're telling a whole story. It wraps up tidy at the end, and you get a little callback.
I think the first album I heard front to back in my life was Tommy by The Who. So I think I've been like predisposed to love concept albums for my entire life, and being like a weird theater kid also.
Yeah, I was a Coheed fan. You can't not appreciate the universe creating, like, I'm sure it's what Rush fans appreciate about Rush. You like, you create this universe. There are a couple other ones. Obviously Green Day did American Idiot, which they turned into a stage show. I'm not a fan of that album, but
I think it's aging better than it
did.
I also don't love it. Like, it's not in my tops of their discography by any means, but I like it more than I did in 2004. I'd put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Some of the other ones, I was just like trying to think of other ones, like Arthur by the Kinks is a good one. Obviously Sgt. Pepper, Lonely Hearts Club Band is like, that was the first ambitious, like, oh, we're going to have an alter ego band that we play as. And it was like, that's clearly like a precursor to the Black Parade. Like the black, like even it
the
looks
outfit,
the same.
The outfits are the same. Yeah. I also have for like, if we're talking like emo concept albums, basically Cursive's entire discography, like
appropriate shirt you're wearing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Look at that. Domestica is a concept about divorce. The Ugly Organ is, if you look at the liner notes of the Ugly Organ, there's stage direction in it, like a theater show. Happy Hollows. Like, they have four that are just like straight up concept.
Mountain Goats is another band that does that great. Like Beat the Champ is one of my favorite albums.
Sunset Tree is like that too. Life of the World to Come is like that. Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do. And then obviously like this is before getting into like Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously that's, we want Pink Floyd. Like obviously those are
MCR, Murder by Death's Who Will Survive and What We Left of Them. Gerard Way actually sings on the first track of that.
Amazing.
And they actually have Murder by Death, which I would love to talk about one day on this show. Who Will Survive and What Will Be Left of Them is their second album. Their fourth album, Red of Tooth and Claw, is actually a prequel to...
Interesting.
And if you play... Red of Tooth and Claw ends with the song going into the first song of their second album.
Yeah, I dig that. Very cool. Funeral for a Friend had one as well. It wasn't...
I don't think I know that one.
Tales Don't Tell Themselves. Anyway, that is it for The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance.
I'm definitely going to listen to it for the rest of the day.
I don't know. I might fire up Three Cheers. I listened to the Black Parade a couple times heading into this episode, obviously. So, Jake, thanks for talking to me about the Black Parade, buddy.
My pleasure, man. We'll see you. We won't see any of you. We'll talk to you.
We had such a good ending, and you had to one up the ending.
I fucked it up.
Yeah, we don't need anything clever. We just said thank you. So, guys, thanks.
Thanks.
Talk to you next week.
Try the fish.